Okay, it's 10 o'clock. We'll call to order the Tarrant County 911 Emergency Assistance District Board of Managers meeting for July 25th, 2022. Do we have any agenda announcements from the Executive Director?
No, sir.
All right, then we'll move to item three, consent agenda.
Move approval of consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. We'll move to item four, Executive Director's report.
The first item on our report is a signature card. This is for both Kevin and Chief Steele. So we'd like just two signatures, I think, and we can make arrangements for Julie and Robert to come in and sign this week, hopefully.
Julie's out all week, so.
Julie's out all week? Okay. And then that will have Kevin, and in October, we'll be set up for those check signings for the Deputy Director to sign. Your call volume reports for both May and June are on page 27 and 28. Just let us know if you have any questions about those.
Is there anything we should be concerned about?
They're running pretty smoothly from, I mean, for the whole year back is what I've, since I've been seeing them printed out. They're pretty consistent. Nothing stands out that we need to be aware of or we need to give some attention to.
Okay, 572 texts.
Yeah, that's a lot.
All right.
Item C is just the NextGen 911 grant application. We did meet the deadline. We've also had an alliance meeting since then. The alliance, Richard Muscat said they would be reviewing, and if they had any questions, we'd be notified. We have not had any notifications, so we're hoping that we're all good. But so we're just waiting on that. We're waiting on August. So that went quite smoothly. Thank you, Sarah's team and Kevin and Monty for making sure we got that in time. D is the letter to the city managers, which is on page 29 of your workbook. Not the way back 29, that's a critical part. I'm hoping that this is clear enough that we can reach all audiences at our level and above, and those that need to make decisions for our agencies. It's open for discussion if you have any, if there's any more questions. I know that as I put timelines as much as I could in here for you, Aubrey, and then Wayne has some more timelines for you.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
So we wanted to make sure that we met those requests.
Thank you.
Mr. Bronson, anything?
Chief Davis just joined.
Okay, Chief Davis is on.
Welcome.
Chief, we're on item 4D, letter to the city managers.
Got that. Page 29.
I would request a statement at the end, a call for action. Please share this information with your city councils.
Thank you.
The state statutes are real clear. We don't take direction from city managers. And I don't know about the other cities, but I do live in Arlington. And the Arlington webpage is very clear that this board reports to the city council.
I can just make that.
And not the city manager. So we communicate to them, we communicate to our member entities in lots of ways. We've communicated through the PSAT managers, we've communicated through the radio, the mayor's council, the updated newsletters. So we're just trying to close off that loop.
And do you still want it addressed to the city managers or?
With the call to action, yes.
Yes, sir.
So I still have an edit here based on our previous discussions. Second to last paragraph, the district will need to pause all assistance program. I think the proper phrasing is the district may need to pause.
Sure.
Right here.
Okay.
I think this issue is still an item of under consideration, but we don't have all the facts in front of us yet. What is the actual project cost?
And so I think change will to May?
May. I think that's the thing we want.
And that's consistent with previous communications.
Yes, right.
I also think that before we find ourselves in concrete, we need to get all the factors of what the actual cost is going to be and see the project scope and true implementation elements. Because when it comes to the ARPA money, it's spend the ARPA money on the project. That's the fundamental thing that I get from the state.
You're correct.
So that's where the term may needs to be in here as we look at the management of the project. So, and if we have to make some key decisions moving forward, we'll make those decisions and we'll make sure the council is out there properly informed.
Any other edits?
Everybody's okay. Chief Davis, are you okay?
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'm thinking through is that if we're asking that they share with their council, if we also want them to share this information with their budget directors, I mean, that would be common sense, but do we want to make available any reports or information that regarding how much and what type of assistance cities have received over the last two or three budget years in order to help them plan moving forward, or do we just assume that they have access to that information?
I think this letter is probably good enough to go out first, but a secondary communication that sort of if we find ourselves in the situation where we're going to suspend the assistance programs, we can share all that information with the councils out there in a hyper transparent way, so they can see what we're seeing and can understand the decisions we're making, or have some validity to it. But I don't think all the pieces are in place to articulate a position yet, because we don't have a final bid or a proposal for our project. So I think all the points you're making are valid. It's just a matter of timing. When's the appropriate time to do it? So as a preliminary communication, I think this is the best way to do the preliminary communication. But all the points you're making will certainly include on our follow-up communications if it's necessary.
Any other questions?
Anybody else? Okay, I think you've got direction, appropriate direction
on
it.
And Chief Davis, did we meet your expectations with this letter?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Lastly,
just to be clear, so what we're doing is we'll tear on her or giving her permission once she makes those changes to go ahead and send the letter out.
Yes. Okay. I'll ask for one last write of review before I sign it, but certainly, yes.
Yes, sir.
Good.
Okay. Let's move to item five.
I have one more.
Okay.
On the executive report. On July the 14th, the district had a minor, mild service disruption. And Moni and Sarah are here to brief you on this, and AT&T Jeff is here also to answer any questions.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about a week and a half ago, we experienced some network instability that affected some System 2 PSAPs, causing some workstations to log out. We discovered that it was caused by an AT&T contractor doing some work on the network that was not previously authorized. We are working with AT&T. We've asked them to come up with a solution to prevent this from happening again.
So I think we're back to a box again that we don't like being in. And my understanding of the sonnet, the way the sonnet's supposed to work, is that this is not supposed to happen.
Well, okay, so we moved off the sonnet onto the new network, and there's a lot there's a lot that has to happen to get off the old network onto the new network, and it's kind of tricky on the live network. So there's a lot of little remaining pieces that just need to be done carefully and coordinated. This could have been handled better. We were not notified that this was going to happen before it happened. So
technically, we are off the Sonic network.
We are off the Sonic network. Sonic has been disconnected. We have some of the old routers still in place along with the new routers. But we can't just pull them out. We've got to coordinate the routing changes.
Well, what are they connected to?
They're connected to the new routers.
Okay.
So it's tricky on a live network to pull things out.
But we were told as we were moving off of it that we were going to be safe from this. But we're still using routers from them.
We are using them. The plan is to pull them out, but it's going to take a little while. I mean, we're working towards that. That's kind of, we're on our last steps of removing those routers. We've got four routers left. Or four sites.
Receive any complaints from the cities that experienced?
We had, yes, about four or five PSAPs. Yeah. Okay.
And was any of it significant?
It was resolved rather quickly once they were made aware. But yeah, it was significant enough that we couldn't get logged into the call handling equipment to answer the calls. So it was it wasn't across our center, so not every machine was impacted, but a good majority of them were. It started kicking them out and they couldn't get back in, so that was a little scary for a few minutes.
Yeah, so we had about four PSAPs that were affected with intermittent workstation logouts, as Audrey stated, and their reader boards. The sites that have reader boards had some discrepancies or bad data in the reader board.
So I'm going to ask for the next agenda presentation on the network. A full illustrative description of it, because I've sat through a few of those and I'm still confused as to why is this happening, and is it a architectural design of the system? Is it a piece of technology problem that you're alluding to? And then we've got a control problem regarding our contractors who are not properly being authorized or making us aware of these actions. And I think when those contractors are moving somebody from this office, this entity should be connected and touching and overseeing.
Agreed.
And I think we're starting to see breakdowns and sort of oversight that's not acceptable in the business we're in. So I'd like to see that so I can understand the accountability issue on this, why that's materializing. Because within the last 2 years, this has happened more than it's happened in the last 10 years. And so I think there's clearly something that we can step in and affect some.
Yeah, and honestly, a lot of that has to do with moving to the new network, because once the network is in place, it's pretty stable. But just moving from one to the next on a live network is tricky.
We still have remnants of the Sonic, right?
Yeah, yes.
And is that the cause of this?
That is, I guess the cause of this is just,
and I may be able to speak your language.
That's not really the cause of it. The cause of it is probably the coordination of it and contractors not getting with us before. And we did, because it's a new network that we're on, there's still some things that need to happen. So it's turning up the new network as a cause.
Okay. ATT.
Yeah, yes, sir. I just wanted to add to what Monty was saying, or just kind of reiterate. There are some things we found, right, in the contracting process, meaning like as they were working, right, that not being aware. So. You know, we tightened that down, and there were some things that we need to tighten down even further. with regard to notification, with regard to planning, with regard to documentation. That just, and I won't even say this more broadly than Tarrant County, right, with this specific contractor. So we are taking, and we don't have it in place yet today, but we are taking steps to lock it down even further so that we know exactly the date, the time, everything that's going to be happening, whether it, we feel like, and then too, right, is it a small change or is it a major change? So that, I think, is something that's forthcoming that will help as well. The other thing I would also add is, to Monty's point, it is a really, really tricky process that we're going through right now. And I know we've said it, but I don't think it can be, you know, stated enough, if you will, that the complexity, the redundancy, and trying to see out further and further as we've gotten down the line to make sure that what we do here isn't impacting something further into the network or within a router or within a piece of equipment. So we do have four more left. I think immediate changes that we're going to do on these last four is nothing's going to happen unless it's within a window of time that's preset ahead of time, very off hours, right? That sort of thing. So we can make sure the end of this network change happens without incident. And then going forward, you know, from my perspective and just the network side of it, we should see, you know, stable network, right? Because we're not going in making a lot of changes. The best thing you can do to a network is never touch it. That's the least amount of problems you're going to have. So, you know, in the last eight to 10 months, we've been in this quite a bit to make this conversion. So, yeah, it's complex, right? We have some really smart people working on it. But again, I mean, we've identified some things that we can lock down further to make this end of the transition smooth, if you will.
So Kevin, you need to help us understand this too, because I think, because we've had this discussion before about should we have left the Sonnet standing while we're doing this other, because we're changing tires on a moving car, and I think that breeds potential for moments of failure. And here we are about to embark on another project. And so.
Certainly. So to really answer your question very bluntly is it comes down to communication. And this particular event that happened was not near as widespread as what happened last time, but it hits to the point where Monty and Sarah have tasked AT&T with going back to the drawing board, as Jeff described, trying to lock some things down. Essentially, they've identified some gaps with how they communicate and how they communicate not just with us, but other customers to manage a live system that is very, very different than what AT&T has done in the past from a legacy realm. And that's a problem. When we look back on some other things we've had in the past, they can come back to communication. And in this event, that's really what it was. So we've talked to AT&T and said, find out a way to close the loop on the communication of this, because in this case, it was unauthorized. Monty's team wasn't aware that was going on. They were aware it needed to be done, but this was not the time to do it. So that's what we've kind of come to AT&T with and said, this, you've got to get worked out, and not just with us as a customer. We don't want to be a one-off that, oh, you're going to be really careful with us. No, what do we need to do for the greater good of public safety, and let's follow those new protocols that they're putting together. So that's what they've been tasked with.
So I think we also need to find ourselves, how do we get in a position of accountability? Because I mean, I'm sorry is not good enough. And I think that's the second part. Let's see, a presentation on system design. Second part is this incident, who's accountable for it? So we can clearly see the situation, how it materialized, how we can prevent it from reoccurring, and if it means potentially writing into our next contract some sort of accountability element, because I think we don't have room or tolerance for these kinds of system failures, and catastrophic things can come from these things.
Is there a formalized notification process, or is it just kind of an email chain that?
We received a notification from the district, but I think the problem is with the contractor notifying the district.
Seems like there should be one point of contact that formalized notification process where that person confirms that everybody has received the schedule, and that person verifies that everybody's good, and so we don't have any gaps or somebody missing out there that just kind of got left out.
I think that was the problem this time, though, right? That's they didn't exactly notify you, so you wouldn't
right.
have been able to tell
right.
anybody.
Right.
But we have a change management process, and we have forms that we're supposed to follow, and it just wasn't done.
Yes, if the work didn't get green-lighted until that person was, whoever that VOC was, green-lighted the whole thing, and then we'd be sure that there was no gap in the process.
And that's what AT&T is going to come back to us, and they can certainly address the accountability, because this is an AT&T issue this time. So.
Yeah, and I will have a leadership discussion about this and make sure that the emphasis is on any actions on the network. There's got to be a notification process. We have internal processes at AT&T. I mean, obviously, we impact millions of people with any kind of changes in our network. So I will make sure that those protocols get moved along in the same manner. I don't understand the gap. I did get a call from my tech team on this. They were on it right away. They found the issue outside of what I would call your normal network, and then we found out this was a contractor issue within our own company. So I will emphasize that and make some calls today. So.
Okay. Just from a gender perspective, we want to come back and
yes,
understand
okay.
this. Mr. Bronson?
Yeah. The old network was AT&T. New network is AT&T. AT&T has experience with moving networks all over the world. If we had a failure here, that says one or two things. Either AT&T is not focused on providing levels at the 911 level, and they've had lots of cutbacks since I've been on the board, or they don't have the right people supporting us. And I absolutely agree with you, Chief. We need to be aware of this as we move into our whatever the next generation is, because they're not doing a very good job at keeping this business. And in terms of the points, one of the things that I've asked for before is that this is a great start to our consolidation analysis, but we also need to know what the cost of equipment is at each of our sites. We need to know what the maintenance cost is at each of our sites. We need to know the network cost at each of our sites. And if we have shared networks like the backbone, then we ought to look at the call volumes and say this is what the proportional cost of those backbones are at each of these sites. That's absolutely critical information for us to as we move towards looking at consolidation. And I think if you had that information, we could have been apprised sooner that, yeah, there's actually two routers there. One of the old ones is staying.
Neil, correct me if I'm wrong, Neil, but didn't you provide those numbers in our May budget meeting?
No. The numbers were there, but not to the extent of detail that Mr. Brunson is requesting. So we have to work on those numbers.
They were average, but they weren't the actual numbers for each site.
I think that helps. I think that would be very helpful in articulating consolidation.
You want it?
Yes, I got this.
Yeah.
And we can certainly come back for a presentation during the executive session on the network. And Jeff will expect AT&T to give us a presentation on the accountability and the aspect of changes that you guys are working on.
I'm still concerned that we're not properly architectured or something. Something's off. And it just seems something's not normal here. And I think we need to carefully review this and evaluate all three elements of this discussion.
Yes, it is troubling that the number one communication company in the world has problems communicating.
Can I say something real quick?
Yes, sir.
So right now, because we are 98%, I'm going to say, on the new network, we do have those four sites still left on the the routers are still in place. They are operating on the new routers in those four locations, but we can't just pull them out because there's some routes that go through those that use those routers. So once that's done, we'll be more stable. It's just getting to a point where we can actually remove those routers, because if we just pull them out, we're going to have issues. Next board meeting, when we give you our presentation, hopefully, if the board is okay with it, we're going to have those routers already removed at that time. We're planning on getting those routers removed in the next couple of weeks.
Without incident.
Right. We're going to have a good plan, and we're going to do it.
Robert, that's on you and your team.
Coordinated. So we're going to be 100% on the new network, no old stuff left in place by the next board meeting. So just want to kind of give you that.
So I mean, that's a valid point. I mean, technology fails, but how we manage it is the key element here. And if Robert, you could help us on the ATT side, and you guys help us here on the county side to make sure that we inject ourselves, we don't wait for them to come, that we find ourselves personally connected to these things and enforce your way into it. I think that's an element that's got to be solidified, because this is not the way we should be doing business. So whoever's fault it is, we need to figure out that out, and then we need to inject ourselves in a manner that doesn't allow for it to occur in the future.
And that's what the team has done. We just wanted to make sure you were aware when things happen, that the board is up to speed with this, and we're definitely involved. And once it happened, our team noticed it, and the idea that somebody was in there doing something it wasn't authorized to was picked up on very quickly.
Yeah, so, sorry, bear with the commentary, but technology people are not focused on the outcome, they're focused on ones and zeros, I think, in some generality. I think our problem is we're in the people business. We've got to remind our contractors that those ones and zeros also impact people, and they need to see the work product differently and the criticality of it differently, and I think that's what our job is here, to make sure that's understood.
As we're pulling these last four routers, is it predictable that certain agencies may be impacted?
To a degree, yeah.
So in other words, saying be prepared, there may be a problem. Are there specific agencies that you know when you pull these, they have the opportunity to be impacted?
Yes, and I can, I can let each PSAP know, and we can have, we coordinate. We'll probably want to do it on a Sunday morning at 6 a.m.
Right.
That happens in my city,
yeah.
Okay?
That's changing the whole process, and that needs to be, we need to make sure on the AT&T side that the notifications go to the district. District's got to notify them.
So. Right.
There needs to be a set change control process.
So
there's always an opportunity, unfortunately, for something to happen, but that's why we schedule time, right? Should be scheduling time that everybody's aware that these next hour or whatever, there could be impacts, but we have teams in place to resolve the issue if there is. So that's going to be my emphasis point back to the leadership team, is we've got to make sure that we've got a change control process, not only from our contractors, our internal teams, our external teams, and that goes back to you all to coordinate at the district level when those events are going to happen and all customers are notified. And I agree with you, Chief. I mean, the mantra in my personal business is, what are you working on? And if you ask any of my techs that, the answer is the customer. I just got to make sure that goes back to our contractor teams and that they understand, to your point about ones and zeros and technology people, right?
Appreciate that, Robert. I think for the county's perspective, I think it's active management and ownership of the issues, regardless of the contractor or not. And I think it's sort of forward-leaning active management effort, and with AT&T and their contractors, to sort of create that secondary safety net with management to ensure we're in the right spot.
One other piece that needs to be put in place, I believe, is that that agency be given the opportunity to go get a go, no-go decision, because we're not aware of what's going on in that city. And there may be something going on that they absolutely can't have anybody in the network at that time.
Well, and they typically do that.
Yeah, we do.
They call us before they're going to do any work. When they know that a change is coming, they are very communicative. They're on the phone. Aubrey, we're about to do this. Are you good with this? And I know they do that for the other agencies. Because, to your point, they don't know. So if AT&T knows, it has always been my experience, they are very communicative about what they're about to do.
And that's why we give you the opportunity to say, yeah, they are doing some parts right.
We appreciate you bringing it up, because, yeah, we send a lot of emails out to agencies before we do things. It's when we know. And that's what tripped us up on this one, that we were not aware. But we'll get back to some more information on this.
Okay. So you hear?
I hear you.
Okay. All righty. Let's move to the next item, item 5.
The consider approval for the PSAP regionalization study contract with Mission Critical Partners on page 37 of your packet. Task 1 is really the only thing we need to give attention to, so I know you thought, oh my gosh, this is a lot of reading. We're really looking at Task 1. I wanted to tell you what's happened since we've reached out and asked for a regionalization study. Is last week, well, we have two separate, an east side, west side kind of thing. They're not ready to go public, but we have 9 agencies, maybe 10, 9 agencies that are looking at consolidation. We don't know yet which type of consolidation is. We have spoke with, we met with 4 chiefs last week. And
police chiefs?
Police chiefs, yes, sir. And talked to them about what they're looking at. We talked to them about Chief Davis' regionalization study and making sure, told them that we're trying to provide everybody with as much information as we can. I think we will have this study back by the time they actually are ready to take that next step, because we're going to be offering all 4 types, and then they can look at that and see what would be best for them. They were very excited that we were doing this for the district, and just wanted to let y'all know that they have that they're being supportive. So whatever the board decides. So apparently, we've manifested this throughout the district, and people are listening. So this is a great step, I think, going forward, especially with your vision, Chief Davis, of what our future might bring. So task 1 is the first step. There's 3 tasks in this regionalization study. We're going to just take them one at a time. And Sherry Powell with Mission Critical Partners is here. She would be, you'll be our project manager, they approve, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Maybe, yes. I will be the program manager.
The program manager.
And I may have one of my staff actually project managing, but yes, I will be.
So if y'all have questions, Sherry's here to answer them for you.
Any questions from the board?
I would like for this completed thing to be part of whatever your final work product is.
What is that?
This is the piece that says
a subset of cost per PSAP, those kinds of things. So what's the district's cost per PSAP and the services we provide based on the equipment and technology?
Specific cost.
So that's Anil's project.
But that's fine. But as long as it's incorporated into a consolidation concept or whatever you guys come up with.
And I think that this study will pull that out.
Yeah.
Yes. So one of the things that we look at, if you notice in that proposal, we definitely look at each PSAP, their governance, their policies, you know, how they operate. But we also do ask them to provide us, you know, their bills. What bills do you have? And part of it too is we'll do some virtual PSAP tours where we look at facilities to see who might have the space if you really wanted to do a true physical consolidation. But I'm sure you're all aware, PSAPs are having trouble, as all businesses are, with staffing. And when you have multiple PSAPs in a region, what ends up happening is they're competing, and I see you shaking your head, right? They're competing with each other for staffing. And a big outcome, the reason we like to call this regionalization versus consolidation, is because there are different options, right? You don't necessarily have to physically consolidate. Maybe there's the ability to share resources. So yeah, that would be part of what we look at is the cost.
Just throwing this out there, if there was in the study a system that would encourage consolidation, I think, you know, if you build it, they will come kind of thing, versus how do we get you collectively in your own little groups, you know, something that would allow a city to say, okay, we're going to move our PSAP to this new element that's been created, is an option to consider too, I think.
So you want to make sure that within the study there is some discussion about incentives, is that what you're
incentives talking? Or various options, not one single
correct
consolidation strategy, but overlays of various strategies that could be done differently, right? So because I think the political realities of certain things, one solution may not be a route for some cities, another solution could be a route for those cities. I think as long as we have sort of a litany of options to consider for communities to migrate to regionalization,
right,
I think that would be a good way to look at it.
Yeah, there is never a one-size-fits-all when it comes to this type of work.
Right.
And you cannot overestimate the politics of it being successful, right? So we understand that local city politics, county politics, that plays a huge role in whether what they try to do is successful.
Yeah.
Which is where if we had industry thought leadership included, that helps those discussions.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
So that's where industry thought leadership, who's been doing what, would be helpful.
And I think the police chief element in this is also a critical component. So. Okay. Anybody else?
Don, this is Jim.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Don, Jim Davis. Yeah, I think a great conversation, and I agree with every point that's been made. I'm really interested in looking at and seeing what the defined scope of practice includes when it's finally codified. I think that what we need to make sure that we do is have a good, easy to understand explanation for city and county leadership as to what the current state is, and then what best practice is in other agencies across the country, and then what, in theory, a couple different options are, and what it would cost to stand those type opportunities up, and then what type of long-term cost savings there potentially could be, and other efficiencies that are gleaned from that, such as staff consolidation, et cetera. I agree with your comment about the police. That will always be the need to take, you know, deep consideration into, protected information and CJ's concerns. But I think that other folks have been able to bridge those, and those shouldn't be a reason for a non-starter type conversation. So I appreciate everybody's work on this. I look forward to seeing what the next steps are.
So do we need a motion on this?
Yes, sir.
Yep, motion from the board.
Move approval.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. Let's move to assistance programs.
Good morning. I just have two here that should finish up our year for this year. Burleson is asking for $36,110 for an Eventide recording system.
Okay. Any questions?
I'll move to approve.
A motion.
Second.
And a second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Motion carries unanimously.
And the second one here will be the City of Irving wanting to use their $185,879 of radio assistance for their Motorola P25 maintenance contract.
Move to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
And a second. Irving will abstain from the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion aye.
Motion carries. One abstention for Irving. Motion carries.
Thank you,
thank you, sir. Moving to briefings. Bill?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
It has been, well, somewhat quiet in Austin and will be really quiet next month. Most of the members are out trying to escape the heat. But last month, the Senate Business and Commerce Committee held a hearing on the implementation of House Bill 2911 and Senate Bill 8. And they took invited testimony from Kelly Merriweather at CSEC, and she essentially gave a history of the bill and then an overview of CSEC's process in the grant implementation. They also asked Chip Van Steenberg, who's the president of the 911 Alliance, to testify. And Chip testified on several different things. He thanked the members for the opportunity to apply for this funding. He also testified on how every district is different, and some districts are much further along than other districts. And then he went into the challenges we're facing. The first thing he brought up was a short time window that these funds have to be spent. And in explaining that, he asked the committee if there was anything the committee could do to get some relief from the governor's office to see if there's any way that window could be extended. So the committee is going to look into that. He also testified on the bigger issue, which is the need for a sustainable, reliable funding source for ongoing costs. And the committee, it is July, we're not in session, but the committee is very receptive to that message. Probably four members of the committee all spoke about the need to revisit the fee and figure this out because we have to have this. What I would recommend for our strategy from now through January is for Sherry and I to work together, start setting up meetings with key members of Senate Business and Commerce, Senate Finance, House Appropriations, House Public Safety, Lieutenant Governor's Office, the Governor's Office, and Speaker's Office. And we'll have a handout with our key message points on there. But I'm going to start working with Sherry to set these meetings up and get these started. One consideration that's going to play into next session is Comptroller Hager is going to come out and explain how we're going to have close to $27 billion in discretionary spending next session. Now, I don't know exactly how that's going to play into the legislature's thoughts of, do we want to raise a fee when we have this many billions of dollars to work with? But it's just something we need to keep in mind. Obviously, we're pushing for a fee increase, but I just want you to know that that's out there. And then the last thing I want to talk about is...
So real quickly, though, because of that, one-time money again,
yeah,
scenario... maybe that could be incorporated to any shortfalls we experience as we go through our current project element two is a thing that we may want them to consider.
Absolutely.
So I think that's something we need to incorporate into a strategy as a secondary path. Mm-hmm. Certainly a primary goal still the fee increase, but I don't want to lose sight of this
No. I don't ever remember the rainy day fund. I don't know what the number's going to be, but it's going to be larger than I've ever seen.
Sure.
I've been in Austin since 1999.
You think a lot of that's going to go to the border?
What I think is a lot of it is going, there's going to be a lot of talk to use it to help with property taxes. I think it's going to be a lot for the border, and it gets into my next topic, which is school safety. And I attended several hearings in June on Uvalde and overall school safety and security. And it was very clear that many members have no idea that when they call 911, it doesn't go straight to the police. And it's going to be very important for us and 911 districts as a whole to be a resource for these members and to explain and educate these members. And if Next Generation 911 can be a piece of this puzzle, then we need to make sure they understand this and why this funding is so important. And that's going to be part of the message that we take when we have these meetings.
So that's right on target. So there's like a 3 or 4 full element here in the strategy, but I think those all fold into each other.
They absolutely do.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And whatever we need to do as far as, and we don't have a definitive champion yet.
And the House Public Safety Committee, you know, James White was the chair of that committee, and he bought on immediately, and he pushed it hard through. Senator Hancock was, at the time, the chair of BNC. He bought immediately. Senator Schwertner is now the chair of BNC. This is more than likely where this bill is going to go through next session. We have a very good relationship with him. It's going to be a matter of working with the alliance and try to come up with the right strategy. Chip testified for that committee. He had 4 members of that committee that had their districts covered parts of Montgomery County. And so a lot of that's going to go into play. It's going to be very important for these other alliance districts to talk to their folks and get their folks on board to show exactly how Next Generation is going to impact each of their districts.
Since Montgomery County seems to be leading, Sherry, maybe we need to connect with them.
And I will work with the alliance as well. When we go through next session, it's going to be important that all the districts have a unified front, and we may be right there in leading the charge. We may need to just keep our heads down a little bit, depending on how our members react to some of these requests.
Yeah, we're twice the size of Montgomery County, I think, as far as citizens served. I just think a partnership with those guys would probably serve both.
Yeah. That's going to play into it. A lot of it just is the politics of it. How are our members historically voted for tax increases, or not tax, fee increases? What's their appetite for that? And if it's something that we can be out in front of, then we do that. If it's something that we hold back a little bit but support in other ways, we do that.
Especially with 911's role in school situations.
911 came up over and over again in these hearings, and there's going to be either a big bill or a package of bills, something, but we're going to have to be in those discussions from the get-go, make sure they understand what our role is and what Next Generation can do.
So who's our regional white knight in the legislative process?
Senator Hancock is still very much supportive of this. I don't know what sort of role he's going to play next session. He's had issues with leadership in the past. I think Phil King, who will be in the state Senate, is going to be very important for us. As a former police officer, and he's chaired House Public Safety in the past, so he gets these issues. I think we're going to have champions in the Senate with, I think, Joan Huffman, who's the chair of Senate Finance, will be a good champion. The House is a little bit murkier because there's just going to be so many new House members and committee memberships are going to change. But as we get closer towards January, we'll have a better idea.
Bill, I think, and Sherry mentioned that even back when we did licensing, you know, that took several years, but our most influential group were our chiefs and our sheriffs, and we made a presence at every Police of Chiefs Association conference meetings and fire meetings, anything that we could get into the door in to help educate them and to get their support. And I think that having that support, especially with still Uvalde being raw, is going to be very, very good for us.
I think that will be critical. Many of the these police departments, fire departments, to get in there and talk to these members and stress the importance of next generation public safety going forward. That will help move the needle tremendously.
And I think we can help in that area.
Yeah.
Perfect.
We're going to Austin, guys.
Yep. Okay, anything else, Bill?
Bring who you need.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you very much. Do we have anything for executive session? No? All right, public comment. Anyone from the public wants to share a comment, now is the time. Seeing no public comment, go ahead and call the meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Guys, appreciate it.
Keep us hungry and we'll get the meat done.
I'm telling you, is that the secret?
That's right.
Don't listen to him.
Fish in 52 minutes.
Yeah. I did like 7 o'clock.
All right, y'all got the whole day.
Yeah. Want to another